Welcome, dear friends, fans, and fellow aficionados of Leadership Excellence. Thank you for joining us here on this episode of Leadership and Loyalty Tips for Executives, part of the Full Monty Leadership Interview Series, where today we will look at what it actually takes to go from someone with a good idea to being an entrepreneur and then going on to running an Inc. 5000 company without leaving a path of devastation in your wake, which so often happens. I'm your host, Doug Barron. I'm the founder of FullMontyLeadership.com, one of Inc. magazine's top 100 leadership speakers to hire, executive mentor, entrepreneur, magazine contributor, and international business speaker. If you're a new listener and new viewer to the show, I want to thank you for joining us. Strap yourself in. We're about to go full Monty. If you're a regular, big thank you to you for being one of the 1.5-ish going up towards 2 million downloads. Appreciate that. You've made us number one podcast for Fortune 500 listeners and consistently kept us at the top in leadership, new family business, and a whole bunch of other categories. Thank you for sharing the show with everybody that you know. And remember, we always need your help to help us stay relevant. So get yourself over to iTunes, rate, review, and subscribe to the show. All right, let's strip it down and dive right in. Watching and listening to this show, you're either a high-level executive, an entrepreneur, or a leader in some sort of capacity. However, have you actually stopped and asked yourself what's really driving you? Most of us who have climbed the ladder to success get to a place where we're driven by something that is beyond money or even success, but sadly, so few people find out what that is until it's too late. Many people make it to the top and then find a way to pour gasoline all over their achievements and set the whole bloody thing on fire. Why is that? My guest today is Tony Grubmeier. Now, Tony is a builder. While he's most well known for building multi-million dollar businesses, he's also spent a bit of time as a bit of a destroyer. He was on the other side of that for a while. He's built businesses side by side with his childhood friends. His mission in life is to build a community where struggling entrepreneurs know that they can achieve anything they want despite their past. And actually, while examining their past, which is also rare, the journey to self-fulfillment wasn't an easy one for Tony. He lost almost everything he had back in 2008 when he was struggling with drug and alcohol addiction. And he's transformed himself, he's transformed his business, and moreover, found a purpose in what it is that he does. So ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together and welcome Tony Grubmeier.
Woo! Hey!
And the crowd goes wild.
Love it. Hey, thanks for having me on the show. Yeah.
Good to have you on.
I appreciate you. We got a chance to chat a little bit, and I got to tell you, I'm strapped in. I'm ready for the full Monty, and I'm excited for where we're going to go, and I'm literally all yours.
Thanks, mate. Well, that's great. You know, entrepreneurs, for that matter, millennials, don't do particularly well with traditional jobs. And I read that you had 18 jobs by the time you were 16 jobs by the time you were 18, and you'd only got fired for one. Do you think you always saw yourself as an entrepreneur when you look back at yourself as a kid?
No, I saw myself as a builder, though. I always was taking things apart. Electronics, parents would say, hey, you got the new Atari, the new Commodore 64 computer. Whatever you do, don't take it apart. They come back, they go, I just told you, don't take the thing apart. I had it all wired and, you know, reconfigured and put back together. And that's what I really thought my path was going to be. I thought I was going to be an engineer, an electrician, something in that realm. And literally what I discovered kind of on the journey was I love building things that change people's lives. And so I'm like, I don't want to be told what to do because then I'm going to be doing somebody else's crap. I want to start figuring out what I would love out of my life. And then I want to surround myself with people who are on a crazy enough mission to join me. And let's go create and change the world. And that's truly my mission. I don't think I really saw that for me in the beginning days. There's two interesting types of people in my family history.
Yeah.
They're either teachers, artists. They fall in that category. Or they're engineers.
Hmm.
And if you look at my life's tree and all the people in it, they fall into basically those two buckets.
Sure.
And so I've really done a lot of work to figure out I'm not really creative I'm not really an engineer type, so I found to be a hybrid of both, and I've just kind of put myself in the middle.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I think there are people, I know there are people. When I was a kid, if somebody would have asked my mother what was I going to be, the answer was artist. You know, I painted, my art was in galleries by the time I was 10 years old. And people will say to me now, well, do you still paint? You still draw? Yeah, but not really. I mean, you know, I do. I've got some art on the wall that I did. But it's really not my thing because I think the canvas changed. The canvas now is people and it's their minds and it's their lives. And it's interesting for me that there are some people who start from nothing. I mean, they have this magnificent spark of creativity and they're able to create something from nothing. And there are other people who I think are artists in a different way, and they are the dismantlers, they are the refiners, they are the tweakers, and you know, and I think that's one of the things that you and I have in common there when we spoke last time, is that willingness to sort of look beyond and look a bit more inside of where people don't normally look. And you've built businesses on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, my friends call me Crazy Tony. I'm not the guy who's going to be the normal, tell you how it is. I'm going to tell you how it is, and you may not like it, but it's there because I care. Yeah. It isn't because I'm coming at you and I'm high and mighty. It's not my ego I'm leading with. It's my heart, and I really love to help people say, like you said it in the intro, is so many people start out life being told what they're going to become.
Right.
And they get caught up in the rabbit hole and they're living somebody else's life. And I didn't want to wake up at age 70, 80 and go, crap, like I literally didn't live my life. I lived somebody else's dreams. And it hit me about a month and a half, 2 months ago. I said, I'm going to live out my dreams because I don't want my dreams to outlive me.
That's pretty cool.
And so that is now my new visual for how I'm going to do everything. And when I work with people, I mean, that's kind of what I want to pull out of everybody is like, what are you wanting to do with this life, this one life you've been given?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because, you know, I think most of us at some point have heard somebody say, well, you know, he had a peaceful death. You know, he would, you know, I want to die quietly in my bed. And I'm like, my God, I don't want that. Please, that would be horrible.
I want to skid into my grave.
Yeah, who is that quote from? I'm trying to remember that quote is who said that, you know, want to skid into the. I mean, I get that. I totally get that. Because it's
Yeah, you fell off of a mountaintop. So, I mean, when I start thinking about somebody who almost died, I'm like, there's a guy who was living.
I was definitely pushing the envelope a little. That's true. We all have our addictions. Yours was drugs and alcohol. Mine was adrenaline, and I was mainlining, baby.
Wow.
Not a good idea. Not a good idea. Now, as you built your businesses, you ended up on 2020. You had business partners with Richard Dreyfuss approaching you. Tell us about that phase of your life.
Yeah, so I was living in Southern California. I'm originally from Northern California and happened to get into a radio broadcasting career. My first son, Ethan, was born. And right then and there, it was heading into 1998-99. I really saw what wasn't my future. I love radio. I love broadcasting. But I said, you know, it's still being told what to do every single day, right? Things you had to read. And so I literally hung up the headphones. And I was really good living in Silicon Valley, working on the computers part-time. And I started building websites, and we monetized traffic and had about 7 million visitors a day to all of our properties. We were selling traffic to Yahoo and Google and, you know, Alta Vista back in the day. And there was all of this stuff going on. And I ended up partnering with a couple gentlemen in what I truly believe was one of the greatest periods of my life, even though it all went to hell in a handbasket. I learned so much about creating and starting something with a bunch of partners.
Right.
And what we did is we had created a company called Goosehead, and it was a product and service for teens. And it was going to be one of the biggest properties, I believe, to date on the internet, where it was video episodes. It was 30 minutes and it was completely built for the web. Traditionally, you'd go in and watch a 30-minute episode for teenagers, and it was awesome. And we canned a lot of shows. I think there was 10 of us total. So like John Henry Williams, Ted Williams, his son, he was a partner at the time. Wow. Richard Dreyfuss was involved in the property. Mark Schilder, there was a gentleman, Pat Galvin. These people all saw something, and we put a 13-year-old girl as the the vision for the company because she was a teen. So she was attracting, you know, right. other teenagers to the property. And so it was going well. And I even had a partner, Brian Tochi. Brian was, I think, in Police Academy. So I had all this kind of coolness of living in Hollywood. And then I had the glamour of these actors around us. And 2020 picked up the story of what we were doing. And they came in with their video cameras and was filming everything. And we got caught up, or at least I did, in like, oh, this would be really cool. Like, this was great. And what I realized, I was telling a story. And the story wasn't something that I could truly get behind. I was cash funding it with one of my business partners, Gil. We were one of the silent partners kind of in this business. And .com, a lot of them blew up around 2000, 2001. We lost.
Yeah, that was the first dot bomb, right?
Yep. And the wave was this. There was a whole bunch of partners. Some said sell, some said don't. I was one like, please sell. Warner Brothers and Sony are knocking on our door. They want to give us a big chunk of change. And it didn't happen. And so then I'm left with, now what? Do I want to do this again and again and again and again? And no, I said to right then, I said, I want to go create something that I actually have some control over.
But so that one creation?
It was part, we were partners in it. We were one of 10. So yeah, we all had a hand in it.
But weren't you catalytic in the invention and in the creation?
No, no. Mark was really big in creating it. It was his daughter. And we were all kind of just silent investors pushing money and time and energy. And I was helping with the web and creation and marketing. But no, I was just one of the partners.
Because one of the things you said, I was telling a story. And I'm interested in that because when you say that, were you financing a story being told online, or were you telling yourself a story about what you were doing?
No, I think it's the first part. So I had a herbal supplement company I'd launched earlier. So I had this company, and so we were pulling money from the supplement company to fund this business. And the story I was telling me was I was going to get rich someday. I'm going to get rich. I'm going to make a lot of money. I had the $6 million, you know, check in my hands. I was already cashing it. I was telling myself the dreams and everything I was going to do. And then I watched this thing burn right before my eyes. And it put me in a lot of depression because, you know, you fork out your time, money, and energy. You go to your wife. I was married at the time with a newborn. And I'm like, honey, this is where we're putting our money. And you got to believe me. I believe this is going to happen. I didn't even believe in risk. I just believe like we're going to go for this. And, you know, what I did was lose, you know, a nice chunk of change. And it got me to really think that from here on out, I'm going to be in charge of my destiny.
Okay, so let's backstep a minute. So when it's all going great, you know, you've got Warner Brothers and Sony pitching you and pitching your partners. What are you telling yourself about you at that time? How do you see yourself?
Young, coming into a lot of money. I mean, that was the first thing that I saw was, oh my God, look at me. Like we've made it. Like we've made this thing and it's going to happen. And I mean, imagine being in your 20s, walking onto studio lots and then watching film productions and crews and knowing that all of this stuff you're a part of. And it didn't matter if I was small or I was the deal. It was still cool to be a part of it. And it was what I still truly believe to this day. It's all fantasy. You know, Hollywood is a lot of fantasy, great at telling stories. And I bought into the story that I was told, which was, hey, we're going to make this thing happen. And when push comes to shove, and, you know, six people said, no, we didn't sell. And I watched that thing burn. And I was one of the four that wanted out. And I said, you know, this is where I believe we can go. We can go do it again. Because that's my mentality about life. Like, it happened today. Cool. Let's go create it again tomorrow. I just live with that mindset. And so the story I began to tell myself was in the beginning was, hey, I made it. I was successful. I was rich. Look at me. Look at me. And it was still just a lie. We hadn't done anything yet.
But I think that that's the piece there that I think that so many of us miss is that we get to the accolade. We get to whatever that accolade is, whether it's a big check, whether it's a big title or something that tells us, I've made it. And there's this, I mean, I think that we should celebrate our successes. I'm very much in favor of celebrating our successes. But there's also that moment of what I call complacent celebration, meaning that I've made it, I'm celebrating, but really I don't have to do anything now. And that for me, every time, as you know, I mentor and work with very high-level individuals, and every one of them who's had a fall, like we talked about, my fall was off a mountain, yours was something else. Everybody has their falls. And everybody I've met who has a fall, it was that. It was the complacent celebration, that moment of, I've made it. I don't have to do anything now. You know, and it's one of the things when Elon Musk, I heard an interview with Elon Musk, and he said when he sold PayPal, he had enough money that he could have gone and bought an island. And he went, yeah, but there's more to do. And it was that mentality. And at that point, he went and borrowed some more money to add to PayPal, which started Tesla. That mentality is rare. You know, because people talk about being entrepreneurs, but they don't understand this desire to, not to get more money, and although that's part of it, but that desire to fulfill something that is within us, that calls to us, what I call our soul, but call it whatever you want. But your soul calls out to say, you're meant for something bigger, something greater. And the world looks at you and says, you know what, mate? Out of 10, you're a 12. But inside, we know, you know what? I'm not really. And it's not from a place of deficit. It's from a place of there's a bigger picture. When you crashed and burned, when it all sort of burned down, what were you telling yourself then?
Well, I told myself everything. I told myself that I screwed the pooch and that wasn't worth living anymore, that the banks wouldn't give me any more money, the credit card companies wouldn't fund more credit cards. I destroyed my family. I hurt my kids, my parents, my business partners, everything in my life, 2008, 10-9-8. I remember the date. I'll never forget it. I just filed for divorce from my wife on earlier in September, and then I took a little vacation because that's what we do in life, right? We take little vacations. We check out from reality. And I happened to go to Mexico, and I came back, and I said to my wife, I said, can I see the kids? And she said, hey, I'm taking them to the pumpkin patch for Halloween. We're going to get some pumpkins. Would you like to come? I'm like, sure. And I was checked out even though I was with my kids and my soon-to-be ex-wife. And I literally was there, and I wasn't present. And I ended up going home, and as my wife ended up taking me back to the apartment, I got out to put the key code in, and she said, do you mind if I talk to you? I said, no, and she got out, and she literally, like eye to eye, like you and I, and she said, honey, well, she said, Tony, she goes, I don't love you anymore.
Wow.
And I said, okay, sounds good. And I proceeded to go in through the gate and kind of hold my pride and everything together, and I went up to my apartment, and I went into my bathroom, and I pulled out every freaking drug I could possibly find.
Sure.
And I put them out on the table, and I've been on a high level of pain medicine for some knee surgeries. I was on testosterone, HGH. I was taking Xanax, Lunesta, you know, anything you could to change the way I feel. Oh, gosh. Yeah. No. And in that moment, I started writing my suicide note. On my text, you know, on my phone, I was going to text out my message to the world like, hey, I've had enough. And I don't know if it was hearing the words I love you, which I have a really hard time with anyways. And I heard I love you in my head. And then I heard a big scratch. I don't love you anymore. And I could see it just being erased. So everything that I was as a human being was now truly gone. Nobody's loaning me money. My family doesn't want me. And I just said in that moment, I'm screwed. I'm going to go. And I started writing my note, and I received a phone call, and a buddy of mine called, and he says, hey, I'm just super compelled to call you right now. I'm not quite sure. Do you mind if I come and visit you? And I said, yeah, whatever, click. And I wanted to get back to my whole thing, and I'm like, oh, he's going to be here, and then he'll call the ambulance, and then they'll bring me back to life. I don't want that. I just want to go. And I put everything away, and I got a knock on the door. He came in, and he gave me a big hug, and he says, Tony, you know, I'm here because your life – has meaning and purpose. Wow. Your life has meaning and purpose. And I don't really know any other reason why I'm here, just to tell you that I needed to tell you that was on my heart, like my soul. And I said, awesome. I said, okay, cool. And then we began to sit down for about an hour to 2 hours and really had the conversation really look like, you know, what are you doing?
Right.
Like, what are you really doing with your life? And I think I probably skirted around some things just to kind of get him out of my house because I was really confused. You know, I just got told I don't love you, I want to die, and now you won't let me die, and now I'm sitting here with somebody knocking on my door. And
who's telling you your life matters.
Yeah, and in that moment, I made a decision, obviously, not to kill myself, but I made a decision to figure out what he had said to me. What was my purpose?
Right.
What was my purpose? At one time, it was a family, it was kids, it was a business, it was the things that I wanted to do, which was, I thought, like to be a good friend, but I sucked at it because I was lying and hiding and stealing and cheating and doing all these just bad things behind the scenes. And it wasn't something that I was proud of. And so that knock changed my life. That mm-hmm. knock forever has changed my life. It's in my slide presentations when I speak. It's one of the most important things. And I believe we all have a knock.
Yes.
We all get that knock at some time in our life that makes us really wake up to like where are we at and where are we going with our life. And so from 10-9-8, here's what it looked like. It took me until 10-24 to finally give up drugs. Okay. It took me a couple more weeks. After he did that, I still used drugs. I partied hard on my birthday, and I remember it like it was yesterday because it was a wild night for me, which was I went to sushi with a bunch of friends, came back, got a couple lines out, a couple pills, shoved some blow in my nose, a couple pills, and I passed out, woke up the next morning, went to work. I mean, that's how I would live my life after being drunk. And then on that Friday, I ended up going to Landmark Education, a 3-day workshop. And I filled out a little affidavit that said I wouldn't use drugs or alcohol. I was there for the 3 days. And I said, sure. That was the first time I ever said sure around drugs. I said, sure, I can put these away. And guess what? I had drugs in my pocket. While I was going to work on me, I had enough drugs in me to keep me going for the entire weekend while I'm sitting there supposed to be doing personal development, transformational stuff. And I signed a piece of paper and I made it through the entire weekend without using drugs. And that was the beginning of, I think, the journey of the next phase of my life, which was, what does honesty look like?
Right.
And so with this like education piece, you get a 10-week seminar. So I finished the work and I came back for the 10 weeks. And I think it was the first night someone said, hey, how you doing? I said, I'm good. And I think it was somebody being accountable going, how are you doing with drugs and alcohol? I'm like, oh, good, man. I haven't had anything since, you know, I was at that course. And they're like, why? And I said, because I signed a piece of paper. And they're like, yo, bonehead, that was for the weekend. Gave me permission. Came back next week. I was drunk. Didn't use drugs, but I was drunk.
Right.
Came back the next week. I was hammered. The next week, I barely could stand, and they were kind of looking at me like, you don't need to be here anymore. And so you gave me permission. And that goes back to what we were talking about with the computer, Commodore 64, Atari. Hey, don't do this. It was radio. It was, I don't like to be told what to do.
So tell me about that. Let's go there because, you know, I understand people. I understand how their coconuts work. I have the same challenge. I don't do well with being told what to do. As part of my agreement, my wife and I's agreement, actually, that neither of us, and this is, people ask us all the time, you guys have been together 20 years, what makes it work? And my wife has said, we were actually at somebody from that company you just mentioned. We're at one of their top coaches' weddings in the Caribbean. And she was, you know, she's not young. She waited a long time to get married. And so she met my wife for the first time. She says, oh, I'm really excited to meet you. And my wife's like, oh, really? And she says, yeah, you're a total inspiration to me. And my wife's like, I don't know you. And my wife didn't know anybody at the wedding, and I only knew the bride. And she said, why? And she said, because of the way Dove speaks about you and, you know, describes your marriage, it's inspiring. And she said, oh, that's very nice. And she says to my wife, what's your secrets? Mara says, we have two. And she said, what are the two secrets? She goes, the first one will surprise you. And she said, what's that? And she said, divorce is always an option. And the girl looked at her and goes, really? I would have thought divorce wouldn't be an option. She goes, no, it's always an option. And she said, can you explain that? And we said, yeah, it's easy. I can't take her for granted because divorce is always an option. Not for me, for her. And she can't take me for granted because divorce is always an option for me, but not for her. And it's that mentality. And she was kind of surprised by that. And then we said, the second one was a little more closer to the bone for this particular person. But she said, what's the second one? She said, we don't try and change each other. The number one rule we had was we can challenge the shit out of each other to be better, be greater in who we are. But we don't have the right to change the other person because we don't like it. And the fact of the matter is that we're both people who are both strong, powerful individuals. And I don't want to be told what to do. I want to choose what to do. But I love to be challenged to be a better, bigger version of myself, a more pure and authentic version. And I think that that's that's what, you know, when I hear what you're saying there, that's what I hear is that, you know, it's seen as rebellion, you know, that I don't want to do what you tell, but it's actually, it's in many ways not rebellion. It's the opposite. It's encapsulation of my soul. I won't be boxed in.
I won't be pigeonholed. I won't be boxed in.
Right. And so that part of you that calls out to be greater is often, and this is what you just described, and I think it's really important for our viewers and our listeners to grasp, is that that part is often self-destructive because it's like, you know, I don't know my purpose. And what I have said to people before is the work that I do really brings people back to what is your soul's purpose, your core purpose. And the reason I say it's important is because if you don't have a soul purpose, then you will be a rebel without a cause. And if you're a rebel without a cause, you'll go, oh, I can't do drugs? Fuck you. I'm doing drugs.
Yeah, no, definitely.
I can't drink? Screw you. You know, I can't do this? Okay, I'm doing it. Because it's a rebel without a cause. That same fire is there, but it's directing it.
And then, I mean, 100%. I mean, so when I said, oh, okay, I got permission. So guess what? I got drunk. I got loaded. And then it literally took me from that date all the way until I called my mom on 12/14 of 08 to sell my mom on a dream of a piece of homework assignment I had to do for that workshop. And she, in like 30 seconds, called me out and just said, bullshit. Basically, at 1 minute, she's like, I'm going to stop you, son. And then for the next like 43 minutes, 44 minutes, my mom began to tell me what my life could look like when I had a problem and where I could find a solution, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then on the 45th minute, I said, you know what, mom, I will go home. I'll go home. I'll go home and I'm going to go online. I'm going to review a little bit about what you're talking about. I'll make a phone call. I'll go to a meeting. And I knew exactly who to call. I knew what work I needed to do. And that was that date, besides 10/9/08 of 12/15 of 08, was the first day when I walked in and I said for the first time out of my mouth, I'm an addict.
Right.
I'm an alcoholic and I can't do life by myself. And that was the first time that I get goosebumps just talking about it. That was the first time that I heard somebody else tell my story. And that was the first time I said to myself, I'm not fucking unique.
No.
But I'm uniquely gifted and I'm talented and I have an ability to help people. And in that moment, just like that, I stopped drinking. I haven't had another drink since. And I believe everything about this person that you are talking to right now has been rebranded and reborn from the statement of getting honest, like in everything that I do.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I speak about from the platform is something called pivot point, choice point. And there's a distinction between the two. You know, that moment when your wife said, I don't love you anymore, and you go to the bathroom to commit suicide, that's a pivotal moment. There's no doubt about that. But the challenge is, and I see this continuously, that in a pivotal moment, and that people will come and they go, Dov, you know, shit's going on in my life. And I'm, okay, now you're at this pivotal moment. And they always say the same. Life's going to change. It's going to change. It has to change. I have to change it. But you know what? It doesn't change. And people think that that's the turning point. It's not. It's the pivotal point, but it's not the turning point. It's not the choice moment. Because here's what happens. Something normalizes, and like you talked about, you know, here you are afterwards going and taking Landmark, you're doing your thing, but now you're back on the booze and you're, you know, you're back on the, something's normalized. And somebody says, well, are you different? Yes, I took this program. Yes, I'm doing this homework. No, you're not different. You're full of shit. But that's the problem with a pivotal moment. And I see this all the time. And I say this to people. I want you to grasp this. I don't give a flying hoop about your aha moment. I know you do, but it's egoic because you get to brag that, oh, I've got this great insight, but nothing has changed. I ran a personal development company for 20 years. We had seminars, 5-day intensives that would run 16 hours a day, and I would see people's lives flash before them, and they'd have this come to Jesus moment, and then I'd see them a year later, and they were doing the same crap they'd done before, swearing at the event that it was going to be different. And it drove me nuts. And it was my own journey of realizing that doesn't matter. The pivotal moment doesn't matter. What matters is the choice that you make when things are normal. That's the time when it all shifts. That normal, because then there's two places to go. And the normalized, which I call Monday, so you've gone from pivotal moment to a Monday, is now I have a choice. It's all normalized, then I can kind of get away with it. And I can choose a different direction. It's like, I'm going to go that way. Or I can stay here. Now, if you stay here, that is standing on a down escalator facing in the wrong direction. You are going to go back down a level, and it's going to become normalized again into your normal. And so you'll go back to your old behaviors, and the cycle is then you'll recreate the nonsense, another pivotal moment, and it's never one. And I'll bet, Tony, I'm going to ask you right now, that one you just described, the, you know, your wife saying, I don't love you, and going to the bathroom, that wasn't the first, was it? That might have been the biggest, but it wasn't the first.
Yeah.
Because
no, definitely.
Because we're strong and we're powerful and we're thick.
It's the one that I put all the emphasis on.
Exactly. So I fell off the mountain in 1990, but guess what? That was my fourth physical fall. I fell off Bluff Knoll in Western Australia, 70 feet, and rolled down a shale mountain. I fell two other occasions in between before that. It's not the pivotal moment that counts. It's the choice moment, and the choice moment is when you can actually get away with it staying the same. And it seems to me what's the time gap between you being in that bathroom and your mate knocking on the door to when you said, okay, that's it, I'm done?
Like a month and a half, 45, 40, 50 days.
What you should know is that that's incredibly fast. Because for those of us who are a bit thick, not looking at anybody in particular, took me about took me about 18 months.
Yep.
Right. And what I find is that very often that cycle is 2 years. So it's really important.
Now that's interesting. Now I'm going to tell you why, because I got sober and I began to do the work. And, you know, there's steps. There's a 12-step program. So I was able to do first, second, and third step because that's, you know, easy. I make a mistake, you know, I admit it, blah, 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 blah. And I get to come to believe, I turn it over, life's peaches and cream. And then you get to the fourth step, which is the inventory and the real work and the fears and all. It took me 18 months.
There it is.
Right? So let's talk about it. That's it. 18 months.
That's the thing. Now, I'll tell you something about this that I find fascinating. Because of, again, backlog in psychology. You've got kids, right?
Two boys.
How old?
17 and 15.
17 and 15. Can you remember when they were born?
Yes, of course.
Do you remember how in love you were with them?
100%.
Yeah. And do you remember the point where you kind of got a bit, that love got a bit tarnished? If you're really honest.
Yeah.
It was at 18 months to 2 years. It's called the terrible twos.
Yeah.
What happens is psychologically, and this is true in all relationships, so the relationship with your wife, the relationship with your friends, relationship with your children, the relationship with your coaches, your mentors, whoever it might be, is the first stage of that relationship, endorphins and PEA, which is a whole set of chemicals in your brain, fire off and you fall in love. That has a level of tachyphylaxis, particularly for those of us who've indulged in certain substances over the years. And tachyphylaxis comes in, and so it wears off. Now, the speed at which it wears off will depend on how much you've done, but it will wear off. Now, when it wears off, you're in the second stage of relationship, whether that's with yourself and your work, or whether that's with another as another being. And that second stage of relationship is called power struggle. And that's when you're now at odds with the values. You have values conflict inside of yourself. This matters, but this matters. So that's when the real tough work starts. But what we teach is that's where real relationship begins.
Right.
The real depth of your relationship is not with your baby who has to be there, but with the kid who's now 2 years old who can say no, but still wants to be with you. It's with your wife when you've gone out of the lust and the whether it's the clouds are parting and you're in a place where, you know what, here's my shit and it really does stink and here's my history. And you're willing to step into each other's reality and go, you know what, I'll hold you accountable to that, but it's not my responsibility. It's your responsibility and I'm going to fight with you for the relationship, but not fight you. I'm going to fight for what really matters. That's where the tough stuff starts. And that's what you're doing in that relationship with that fourth step.
No, definitely. I mean, it's the beginning, you know, you peel the layers away of the onion and there's still the onion, right? But you got to keep peeling and peeling and doing the work. And literally, if you get the metaphor, I literally have taken all the doors off of every closet I had. I got rid of everything. I did the cleansing process. And, you know, I was at a meeting this morning. I brought a newcomer to the meeting and I literally began to understand like what I'm truly doing. I'm gifting myself another day, packing my parachute, going out into the world and making a difference in my life and being of service and helping others. And so what I got by getting into the program, begin to do the foundation is my sponsor had always told me, how many years were you drinking? I said, 36. How many years have you been sober? I said, 8. So, okay, cool. Let's talk about that. You got 36 years of being one way. Now you got 8 years of being another way. You're still a little prick. You're still 8 years old. You are a little shit in the real world. Think about your kid. What was that like at 8 years old, right?
Absolutely.
We're talking about it at 2. So he's like, you have a lot more to now work on. You have a lot more. This is just the beginning. This is so now I'm planting seeds. Now I'm working on my harvest. Now I'm working on helping people. Now I'm doing the service work. So it's so interesting for me what we're talking about. I literally wrote pivotal moment and basically the choice. That is huge because that's a breakthrough for me in a couple other areas of my life because I've had those multiple conversations. Like I'm a yo-yoer. I love that. I'm a yo-yo when it comes to food. I literally know that I'm not supposed to eat donuts. What did I do? I bought 2 dozen donuts for a meeting this morning and 2 dozen donuts for my employees this morning. I had 3 because I don't know. I don't have a dimmer switch. I'm either all in or I'm all out. I don't have an in-between. And so somehow I started thinking about donuts before I went to bed last night. And this morning I'm at the donut store after going to the gym and working out for 2 hours. I mean, that's just the kind of crap that we do. But here's the healthy part of it. I didn't pick up or use today.
No.
And I got other areas of my life that I'm working on improving. But the thing that brings me back to everything that I'm about is that my choices are different today. And so that was huge for me. That was if not the defining moment of my day in that moment you shared, because that is crystal clear versus the pivotal moment. I have lots of those.
Yeah.
But that choice and then the time you were saying for yourself, you know, a long period of time. I had a short window. Well, you know, because I wanted to die and I didn't, and then I got kind of a little introduction into what my life could be like, and I started getting that meaning and purpose. Then when the 14th call came and your mom's giving you life in a bottle right now over the phone, she's saying, I've been there, I did it with your dad. But she said something in that moment I want to make sure I say, because this was a defining moment in my decision.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you know that your family history, there is a bunch of alcoholics, father's side. I mean, it's long. I think it's skipped one generation. It's pretty long. You have a choice and you also have the ability right here to stop the cycle.
Right.
She said, you have the ability and choice. And I said, in that moment, I said, you know what? That's going to become part of my mission
right.
for the next years until these kids get out on their own at 18 and they go live their life. I'm gonna do everything in my power to make sure that my kids get the best of me for the rest of their life. And they don't have to go and bury me because I went back on my word and I went and did horrible things and I'm out of the house now. I want my kids to want to be around their dad. That's been one of the hardest relationships to repair because my youngest or my oldest at the time said, you know, dad used to be the strongest man I know, and now you're the weakest during this whole process, this Tony .com boom. And I've always had that in the back of my head. I know what I did. I know I hurt them. I was hurt myself. I'm going to break the cycle. That's all I've always done in my mind, to say it's time. It's time. And it's that pivotal moment where I'm like, it's over. It's done. You can draw it anywhere you want. You can put a $1 billion check on it. It's cash. Meaning I bought full into the belief that I can't drink today.
Right. That's awesome. You know, you've said something that I think is also important and powerful. You know, first of all, again, from my background, you know, there was always this conversation about is it nature or nurture, and the primacy of DNA. And the primacy of DNA has actually been proven to be false. It's actually not true. The DNA is adaptable and it's not fixed. But at the same time, I think it's really important that we acknowledge that predominance is there in the DNA, but the choice, which is far harder, to not go in that direction is also there. And I think that, again, my belief, not the truth. You know, I talk about some of the science that I just did and so the psychology, but some of it is my opinion. My opinion is that there's something within us, that calls to us. And I call it the diamond. You know, it's there and it's a big ass diamond that's sitting right there, but it's buried under 30 tons of shit. That's all it is. And the 30 tons of shit is your background, it's your childhood, it's stuff that happened to you that becomes identified with, and so it gets buries the diamond. But the diamond is not it's not passive. It's the soul part of us that calls out, and it's sending that message constantly to us to call us back to being true to ourselves. And I think that most people, in my experience, most people say, I can hear that. Hold on a sec. Let me dump a bit more shit on it. And let's muffle that, baby, yep. Because that's too confronting. Because if I actually investigated, I could tear my life apart and things wouldn't be, quote, normal. Things would be different. I would be maybe perceived as weak and it could impact my marriage and my relationships and my business. And they don't have the courage to do that. And I think it's such a vital message to understand that that journey, as Campbell says, is the heroic journey. It is that journey to say, what is in there? And I am willing to, as Campbell says again, the darkest cave that contains my treasure is the one I fear most. But that's the one I must step into. And I think that when you face addictions, and by the way, I want to be clear with this and say to everybody watching this, if you are looking, even if there's a part of you, even one little speck of you that's looking at Tony or another addict who is not in Tony's position of having an eight-figure business but is down on the corner and asking you for a buck, and you're looking down at any of those people with anything in your mind about how you're freaking better, let me just wake you up for a second. Every human being is an addict. The only distinction is that some of those addictions are incredibly destructive, but all of them are a way to pull away from, to distract yourself from dealing with the shit you need to deal with. So if your distraction, if your addiction is called church, and you think that that's better than coke, guess what? It's just so you don't have to look at the shit you need to look at. If you think your addiction is better than that guy's because his is heroin and yours is making another $1 million, guess what? It isn't better. It's societally applauded, but that doesn't mean it's better. And that willingness to get out off your horse, in case you fall off your high horse, but to actually get down and recognize that when I look in the eyes of another human being, the only thing I will ever see is myself. Until we get to that moment, we're playing an egoic game that is never going to let us be true, authentic, powerful leaders, but rather entitled titles. And I think that this is an important message you've got, Tone. I really want to let you know that I value it. And I think it's to have people see this journey. Again, you've got to the pivotal moment. You've got to the choice moment. You've done something with it, but recognizing, this is the difference. When it's a substance addiction, you have to recognize daily, I could go down that road again. Any moment, I could go down that road again. There's something always pulling. We don't do that when the addictions are socially applauded. And this is what we have to come back to as leaders of self first.
No, so what you're speaking about, this is it. I want to be a conduit and help people go from a disease mindset to an empowered mindset. Because here's the game that everybody plays. You said it. We all hide.
Yeah.
We all lie. And the lie is that, you know, I talk about with my business partners, we buy into the belief. And this is the lie we tell ourselves every single day. And I asked a whole bunch of entrepreneurs recently in a poll. I said, what is the one thing you tell yourself every single day that you know is not helping you, but you tell it anyways? It's just, I'll do it. You know, I got this project. I'll do it later. You know, I'll read that book. I'll write that book. I'll do it later. I'll find more time. Let me work a couple more hours. I'll do it later. Like, that was the majority of the poll, was everybody said, I'll do it later. And I can't. I got to do it now. I'm in this freaking moment with you like you cannot believe. Because the only thing in life that matters, This is the only thing that I have control over right here, right now. It's you and me. It's 100% you and me, because I'm here connected with you and you're connected with me. Whatever's going on, all my devices, life, everything, I can't do anything about it. No. And so when I really got what that meant in my life, that's when I had clarity.
Yeah.
That, as I saw my sponsor this morning, he's like, hey, you know what, Tony? You know what that's called? You're being a human. You're being a human today instead of being a human doer.
Yeah.
Because most of your life, you've been
human,
a human
doing,
doer.
Not human being. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got it. This has been great. Tell us a little bit about, because now you've got this business, you're very successful. Tell us about Ship Offers.
All right. So 2008, I get sober. Business is chaotic and crazy. We are kind of going through the wholesale mentality. We're selling wholesale to, you know, there's Amazon, there's eBayers, everybody's happy. We're fulfilling some of our products. Ship Offers is an on-demand white label supplement and fulfillment company that takes marketers' cash from, hey, going and buying a whole bunch of product and services up front, and literally let us do all the work, and we'll send you an invoice at the end of the transaction. So you keep more of your money in your pocket. And so we've been in business 15 years, and Ship Offers is in, you know, 43 countries around the world, help ship, you know, hundreds of thousands of packages every single month all around the world. We're helping marketers to literally take the dream that they have, like, hey, I can write good copy, got merchant accounts, I just don't have a supplier and somebody that I can trust. So we've got 60 products that are basically ready to go. We slap your label on it and ship it to your customers. And when we moved to Colorado in 2010, 2011, you know, business wasn't good. Business was a transition from living in Southern California to now taking our families. My business partners, my childhood friends, I've known them since I was 2 and 3. I've grown up, literally skinned our knees together, drank together, had fun together, and we've done life together. So these are guys I've known all my life. And now we're living in Colorado, and we are trying to figure out business and life. And everything seems to be all right, but we just haven't hit our sweet spot. We were constantly trying to do what every entrepreneur does, get back to the good days.
Yep.
Let's get back to the good days. Now, we were still making money, but my paycheck literally was like $1,000 to $2,000 a month. And once again, I started telling myself the story, like, there's got to be something else. And I ended up going to a conference, Traffic and Conversions, out in San Francisco, and I saw – up on stage, William Shatner, 80-year-old guy, pitching his brown bag wine club. And I just saw this guy at 80, still having fun, smiling, laughing, doing what he's been doing all of his career, just having a good time and enjoying life. And I said in that moment, I said, I want to find out the cover that's been on my business that's been hiding the fun. So I wanted to pull out whatever it is, and I want to discover fun again. Walked out of there. A couple of my buddies went with me. We're going to grab lunch. And I said, hey, my business partners just bought this name, Ship Offers. What do you guys think of it? And everybody's like, hey, I totally understand that. You know, you ship. It's offers that you're supplying to customers. I totally get it. And bought right in. It's the only thing we changed. Our business literally then took off. Our belief system changed. We started taking on new employees. You know, was it 2014? We were at 2867 in the Inc. 5000. Last year, we were at 1212. This year, we were at 588. We've grown 600% over the last year. So wow. Why? You changed the name? Your business changed? What happened? Come on. No, we bought in. You know, we had a lot of those pivotal moments. We had a choice moment. I came back. I said, this is it. We literally, right then and there, all bought in. And that's 100% what we've been doing. And I think we're only getting better. We moved into the biggest facility 4.5, 5 months ago. We've already outgrown it. We just are in the process of grabbing double the space next door. This is more space than I ever had in all of my 15 years of business, and we're just doing it like that. Now, however, I know it looks great. There's a lot of stuff that we're uncovering as business owners in year 15. Do we really want to run this big of a business?
Right.
Do we really want to deal with all the emotional problems that you have running a company? Some days I feel like I'm just a giant babysitter. You know, you're coming to work and you're dealing with all these employees. And then that was where we had a shift. I'm not going to stop calling them employees, start calling them team members.
Right.
Because we work together to win together, and we got to play together. And so it's really cool to, you know, to watch people around you step into leadership roles. Because
yeah.
What we've done is empowered people. Because see, that's one thing that I never had in my life. No one really empowered me. They always told me. And I know what it looks like when you tell somebody to do something. Mm-hmm. They're probably not going to be as excited unless they're empowered to do it. And you actually understand, hey, It's all a test. Let's figure out if it's going to work or not. Let's go have some fun. Let's get some data back and scrub it and figure out where we can make adjustments. And we'll pivot from that point. And then we'll keep moving forward. And yeah, this is the greatest time of my life is right here, right now. This has been the most joy, the most excitement. I'm happy. And what am I doing? I'm working with my two childhood best friends. We're building a family here at the workplace. We're growing. I'm affecting lives. People are affecting my life. I feel like I have a pulse again. I can feel my heart. I lead there. Stop leading with my wallet. I put that away because there's nothing that you're going to get there. And now I'm connected as a human being to others. Right. And that makes this company flourish. I really, truly believe. I mean, I run a podcast. I don't run the podcast for anything other than to help one person today be the change in their life. And I've made millions and lost it. And I said this yesterday. I was finishing up an interview. You know really what it is? I'm up to affect a million now. I want to go affect millions of people. I've made the millions. I've lost it. I know what that looks like. But I want to bring change to the world.
Right.
And you say, in a supplement company? I'm like, yeah, in a supplement company, because all it takes is one person to understand, listen to your message and get behind it and be crazy enough. You mentioned Elon Musk. Talk about it all the time. Building a rocket ship, filling with a bunch of crazy people, put some fuel on it and let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ship Offers to me is that rocket ship.
Well, you said something when we had spoken off air that I think is really important for those listening. And tell me how you described your business. You said your business is your
muse.
Yeah.
It's my muse. It's So now my life's mission, right, isn't focused so much on that. Because in 2019, my goal is to be 100% mobile, travel the world, not be tied down to any zip code or area code, and literally be able to go wherever I want to go with my wife. That's my life partner. And we're going to go and travel the world and have fun and go from here to our love place, which is Italy. Spend time with our kids in college, and then be able to spend time with her father in the South, and you know, literally just kind of pivot between these spots. And I said to my business partners the other day, there's going to be an AI floating around, and I'll be able to call in, and you'll be able to see me. You'll feel like I'm right next to you, but that's where I'm going to be in 2019. They're like, you are? And I'm like, yeah, just watch me, because I'm not being told. So I'm now saying to myself, just watch me, because that's my challenge. That's how I have to work at this every single day.
You know, I think that we spoke about this again off air, but I think that this is an important piece for people to get, is there are people who go to work and they go to work. And I think that that's the biggest mistake in your life, is to go to work, you know, go to joy, go to muse, go to passion, go to something, but don't go to work, because that's too hard. And I've said for years, it's one of my stories I tell from the stage. I say, you know, when people ask me what drives me, you know, I say, well, listen, let me put it this way. Let's pretend that there is a dictatorial government that comes into play and they ban me from speaking. Okay, so I can no longer speak. So, okay, I'll write books and I'll do my podcast and I'll do audios and, you know, I'll do videos. No, that's all banned too. Okay, I'll work one-on-one with clients because that's what I do anyway. No, that's all banned too. What are you going to do? Okay, well, the government says, now you got to go work at McDonald's. And I say to people, what do you think I'm going to do at McDonald's? And they go, I don't know, be miserable? I go, no. Yeah, I am going to be not feeling like I'm in the greatest place, but what I'm going to do is what I do. This is what I do. It's who I am. My job and who I am are not two separate things. This is who I am. So I'm not going to work. I'm going to fulfill this purpose. And this is why, I mean, I get it that the vehicle, my speaking is a vehicle for that. Your business is a vehicle for that. And sometimes there are better vehicles. What I do, speaking is a better vehicle than flipping burgers. I'll give you that. But it's still a vehicle. It's still a vehicle.
You just brought up the point. It takes me back when I was in radio. I had a boss once tell me, would you rather, you know, I'm going to pay you $8 an hour. Would you rather flip burgers or LPs? And he gave me a choice, right? He gave me a choice. He didn't tell me what to do.
Right.
And I said, well, you know, I've already flipped burgers, so I'll try LPs. And in that moment, that was, you know, there's a lot here. And I hope that your audience has gotten a lot of value today. Because this is the lie. This is the story that I told you in the beginning. I've told a lot of lies in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had some tremendous things and take place in my life. And then I got really good at telling stories to protect me as a human being. And I wanted to show the world, and I say it all the time when I talk, that I've spent a lifetime trying to look good to avoid looking bad.
Right.
And so everybody, I want you to say, like, you know, what you see and what you hear, there's no perfectness here. It's somebody making progress every single day and working on his character defects and the things that have caused him a lot of pain in his life. He's actually turned the pain to joy, and he's happily married. You're 18, watching two of his boys grow right before his eyes, watching his oldest, you know, fill out college applications for schools. And I'm like, I didn't even finish community college. You want to talk about some joy? There's some joy right there. I'm so happy for my kids and what they're doing with music and lacrosse and sports and life and where they're going and what they're doing. And, you know, like, I love my business partners, their family. I've got a dynamic background of people around me that from my childhood are still involved in my life today that didn't give up on me. And so I don't give up on people. So when you mentioned during your statement of don't look down at people, like, we can't, we have to lift people up.
Yeah.
I was the guy who you probably passed by. You would have saw a zombie. You would have literally given up on this human being. And I got a knock on the door that saved my life.
Yeah.
We all have greatness in us, and some of us are not operating from it. And I literally work every single day to help discover my greatness so I can go share it with the world, because by doing so, I stay sober another day. I enjoy the muse that I've created. I enjoy what I do. I get to go home and just look at my wife and I say, thank you for choosing us. Because there was a time that I know that she said those words to me, I don't love you anymore. And that's why I do what I do, is I now have a belief system that says, you know, if I keep my nose out of the gutter, stay out of the pool halls, and I don't hang out with a bunch of bad people, I'll probably have a good chance to stay sober today and to go home and see my family and to live an incredible life with a lot less than I used to have, and all the worries and all the headaches and all the millions, they're there. But they're not there the way they used to be.
No.
They're not there in the houses and the big fancy cars. They're there in the millions of opportunities I have created for myself today.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that we echo much of the same thing, is that I actually don't – somebody asked me this recently. I actually have no connection to being a billionaire. I'm not driven to that, but I'd love to touch a billion lives.
Yes. And I like that you step mine up from a million, you're going to a billion. So I'm getting behind that mission.
But, you know, it's like, I don't care. I mean, you know, okay, there's a point when it's like, all right, what am I going to, I'm just going to look for ways to distribute that. But touching a billion lives, and by the way, and this is important for everybody, particularly, you know, as a leader and you're watching this, is understanding touching a billion lives does not mean meeting a billion people.
Correct.
Not at all. I just want to quickly tell you this example. This is an example that shifted me. As I said, I had a seminar company for 20 plus years. And after one of these intensives, it was people graciously lined up to say thank you. It was very kind. And there was a lady stood in front of me, and people would say thank you. And my response to that was always the same, which is, for what? Because people say thank you, but they don't really allow themselves to take in what they're being grateful for. And I want to take it in, so I think it's disrespectful. So I would say, for what? And so I said, for what? And she stopped and she paused. And she said, for my grandchildren. Now, this is a woman, 42 years old-ish, you know, around that age. And I said, you don't look old enough to have grandkids. And she goes, well, that's my daughter. She was in the program too. And she's pregnant. And I said, oh. I said, so you don't have grandchildren? She goes, no. I said, well, that's interesting. Why are you thanking me for your grandchildren? She says, because what I've learned here will change my relationship with my daughter. It will change my relationship with my grandchildren. It will change my daughter's relationship with my grandchildren. I want to thank you for that. I mean, waterworks, started bawling. It was phenomenal. And it was at that moment that the way I approached what I do as a speaker changed dramatically. Because I understood it isn't about the lives I impact in front of me. It's about the lives I touch who will never know my name. People who will never know my name, whose life I touch. That's what matters.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's how you impact a billion people. It's not that you have to meet a million and cheer them on or give them money. It's none of that. It's have enough impact to create a choice point. Not just a pivotal point, but a choice point for someone else that they go away and create a ripple effect. Because your sponsor, that happened for them. And who you sponsor, it happens for them.
Yep. No, I get that. I like that.
It's fabulous. Thank you. Been great having you on. Give us one final piece of punch in the head sort of stuff about how this could real what you've learned could add value to somebody right at the top of their game. I'm talking about somebody who's a Fortune 500 business leader. What's the one thing you want them to get that would add a ton of value to them?
I'm going to tell it because it goes back to everything that I'm about. Ask for help today. Don't believe you know everything. Simply remind yourself, back in elementary school, you were taught to raise your hand and ask for help. As we get older and go to junior high and high school, we stop doing that. In college, we don't do it, and then we're never asked about it. Ask for help today. I don't care where it is in your life, business, professional. I don't know everything about shooting baskets. I'm going to go ask Michael Jordan, hey, will you help me? Sure. I'm going to keep asking until I find the answers and use the Googler, get online, figure it out, find a mentor, a coach. But at the highest level, don't be too cool to ask for help. I believe asking for help is a sign of greatness, not weakness.
I'm so with you. Tone, it's been great on you, mate. Tell everybody where they can find you, how they get in touch with you, bring you in as a speaker, work with your organization, whatever it is.
Perfect. Yeah, I got two big places, shipoffers.com. So if you'd like to learn more, visit shipoffers.com. You can get in contact with me. Simply just put Tony in front of it. So tony@shipoffers.com, and I'll be happy to answer your email. Also, the Tony G Show. It's what I'm passionate about. It's literally where I work and help entrepreneurs discover their blind spots and give them some guidance on where they want to go in life. Your past doesn't equal your future, so stop going in the wrong direction and let's go in the right direction. So TonyGShow.com, and I'm happy to answer all those emails personally. And what I love to do is just connect with other human beings.
Fantastic. Well, I'm going to say goodbye to everybody, and I hope you'll stay on until I finish. But I wanted to say again, thank you. This has been awesome. I really hope that to you, the viewer, the listener, I hope that you will take the time to sit. I know that we listen to podcasts in the background, but sit and actually take this in. Give yourself the gift of an hour to just take this in, because honestly, what Tony has shared here with you are diamonds, real jewels that you can really put into your life. And that's not going to happen passively. So please take the time to take it in, take notes. And by the way, Tony said you can reach out to him by tony@shipoffers.com. I would love for you to write to him and tell him the impact of listening, watching him on this show. It's you know, this guy's giving you his time and his energy and his effort. Add value to that. Recognize that value, please. So I want to thank you for watching. Thank you for being here. Again, Tony G Show is one of the places you can find him. And if you are serious, really serious, about having the kind of laser beam clarity about your purpose, your cause, that will create massive positive disruption, that builds a culture that develops the next generation of leaders into not only who they want to be, but who they need to be, and create 10x engagement, reach out to me, Dov Barron, at fullmontyleadership.com. Also, you can stop by The Matrix, which is matrix.fullmontyleadership.com, matrix like the movie, to get my authentic leadership matrix self-assessment tool. It's valued at $197. We're giving it away because it's in beta right now. I want to thank you for joining us here on the show. It's been awesome having you here. I want to thank Tony again. Everybody, round of applause. Whee! Crowd goes wild. Again, I'm your host, Dov Barron. Thank you for sharing the show with everybody you know. Remember, we always need your help in staying relevant, so please go to iTunes, rate, review, and subscribe to the show. Come on over and subscribe on YouTube. You'll find me there at Dov Barron, Full Monty Leadership. Connect with us on LinkedIn. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter @TheDovBarron. And I publish new blogs, videos, articles every Tuesday and Thursday. Until next time, stay curious, my friends. Stay curious about how you can have your business become your muse. This is Dov Barron, and I'm out.